meeting called to order, and we do have a quorum. Representative Dean is presenting a couple bills up in committee, but he'll be joining us in a little bit. And with that, Mr. Gehring?
He just went to check on something, but I don't know if Senate Council can walk through the side-by-side.
The Senate Council wanted to help us, yeah, we'll walk through the side-by-sides and go from there. Let me find them here. There we go.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'll do my best with the House language. You have the side-by-side in your packet. I'll just sort of go over at a high level, and if there's questions, feel free to stop me, and we can go from there. So paragraph A on 1.7 of the House side appropriates about $6.6 million from the HAVA account to the Secretary of State for the specified purposes you'll see on line 111 to 116. And that is House-only language. Paragraphs B and C are also House-only language. Paragraph B has to do with the appropriation to the Secretary of State for improving administration and security of elections. And then paragraph C specifies that these are one-time appropriations and are available until March 23rd, 2023. And that's the date by which the state has to spend the federal funds. On the Senate side, you'll see the comparable language where the Senate appropriates $1.534 million in fiscal 2019, also from the HAVA account, to the Secretary of State for the purposes of updating the SVRS and for cybersecurity upgrades. On the Senate side, starting on line 2.14, you'll see that the Senate makes another transfer from the general fund to the HAVA account to the tune of $163,000. That is to complete the 5% federal match requirement. On line 2.1 of the House side and 2.18 of the Senate side, you'll see identical language, and that is crediting $167,000 already spent by the Secretary of State towards the state match. And then finally, on the Senate side, starting at the bottom of page R1 and going on to page R2, you'll see that there are two policy provisions. The first has both of them come out of the OLA report having to do with voter registration that was done a couple years ago. And these have to do with reports that the county auditors must run to help update the voter registration lists. And it's my understanding that the Secretary of State has already implemented the ability to do these things already.
Okay. Those are the differences and the similarities. I see we have the one similarity. Why don't we start with the public testimony? Secretary of State Simon, I see he's there. And we'll go down the list here. And I'm hoping we'll get through the testimony, and then the people can stick around and we can ask questions of the testifiers. We'll do that all at once, but let's try and get through the testimony first. Thank you. Secretary Simon, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I appreciate it. I appreciate your time, especially late at night here. Thank you for your patience, and thank you for your willingness to help out with this conference committee. I want to thank you for your continued work on this important issue. I need to restate, I know we all know it, but it's important to make a record of this, that in 2016, Minnesota was one of 21 states targeted by a foreign government. Our election system was targeted. No one got in. But from that time until now, intelligence officials at the federal level have unanimously and repeatedly warned us that the threat to our election system is real and growing. Just 5 weeks ago, I was in the latest of what have been a number of classified intelligence briefings, and I can tell you that that was a sobering meeting. We're here today because despite leaders of both House and the Senate agreeing that authorizing the use of the federal HAVA funds would be something that could be done early this session, 2 months into the session, Minnesota is still the only state in the country not to have access to all of its funds. Put another way, 49 other states have access to 100% of their funds and have had since last year in time for the 2018 election. That puts a target on our back. We are a purple state. We are the only one with a divided legislature, and we're the only state unable to begin securing our elections. Now, that is nationally reported, and that makes Minnesota an easy target. And you've all heard about, but I will repeat again, the plan that was put together with a lot of care and a lot of attention and a lot of diligence by a working group that my office put together that included multiple legislators from each party, as well as representatives from the counties, the cities, the townships, cybersecurity experts, and members from the disability community. The group met multiple times last year between July and November, including five subcommittee meetings as well, to develop and vet a comprehensive plan for how to spend these funds, addressing our election system's most pressing needs. Members of this committee, Representative Nelson, Senator Kiffmeyer, were invited to attend or to send any other member in their place, and I want to thank Representative Nelson and Representative Dean in particular for taking part in that working group. When I hear some members talk about the work to do and how this plan needs to be vetted, I would say that that work has already been done. Chair Nelson and Senator Kiffmeyer have had this plan on their desks since late November. So the working group met several times, five subcommittee groups. As of November 27th, Senator Kiffmeyer, Representative Nelson, and others in this room have had that plan on their desks. So the time to have offered suggestions or constructive criticism started then. As of today, I have yet to receive any real pushback on any item proposed in that plan. No suggestion for the inclusion of other items, no alternative plan, not one, despite the fact that we have now had two hearings in the Senate State Government Finance and Elections Committee, which provided the perfect forum to have that kind of discussion. So let me read to you what Senator Gazelka wrote in a recent letter to Speaker Hortman. He said, quote, "The Senate is committed to authorizing the full $6.6 million this session, but only after a robust public discussion and vetting regarding the use of these one-time funds." So either the two Senate hearings were the robust public discussion and vetting that Leader Gazelka talked about, in which case members' questions, I assume, have been answered, or those two hearings were not the end of the robust public discussion and vetting, in which case tonight is a real opportunity. So I'm thankful that we have the chance here this evening to have a discussion about the proposals put in front of you, and I will remain here after the testimony and as late as is necessary to answer any questions that any members may have. And this is the time to do it. So time is of the essence. We need these funds urgently, not just to modernize SVRS, but to secure it as well. All of the proposals in the plan that was developed by the working group address our election security. And, you know, you can't build a house without locks and be surprised then when the bad guy comes in and wreaks havoc, especially when you've already been warned, and we have been warned. We've been warned by national security experts. I don't take that lightly, and neither should the legislature. Thanks for your time and attention. And as I said, I will remain here all night if necessary, along with staff and others with expertise to answer any questions that anyone has. I take Senator Gazelka at his word that he wants that vetting. I would argue we've already had the vetting in the form of the working group over many months that many of you attended. And this report has been on legislators' desks for the last 3 months. So if we haven't had it, let's have it tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Secretary Simon.
Next, I have Max Halperin. I hope I pronounced that correctly. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the tape, and you can proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Max Halperin, Professor Emeritus of Computer Science, and since 2010, my area of professional focus has been on computer systems for election administration. And it was for that reason that I served on that working group that the Secretary just mentioned. Because my perspective comes from that working group, I'm not going to comment on the reporting and match funding provisions that are specific to the Senate bill. I'm going to focus in on the core question, which is whether to have a smaller amount of funding directed specifically at the statewide voter registration system, SVRS, as the Senate version has, or a larger amount with a broader focus, as the House has. From having listened to the committee hearings and the floor sessions, I think that one reason why some legislators may think that much of the funding could safely wait is because of the way we've talked about the events of 2016. Secretary Simon has countless times asked today pointed out that we were targeted in 2016, and nearly as many times that's been met with some skepticism about just how serious that probing of our system was. So here's the truth. It doesn't matter. If Minnesota had been one of the other 29 states that wasn't targeted at all, we would still need to secure our election system, and it would still be an urgent matter. Our election systems had serious security needs prior to 2016, and the only thing that's changed since then is that we're now several years further behind. So I appreciate the Secretary pointing to that year as a way of raising the profile of this issue, but don't get caught up on that. That isn't why the need exists. The need was there before it received such wide attention. The other distraction we've had, I think, has been the half of our glass that's full. We use paper ballots, and we use human eyeballs to check the tabulation of those ballots. And those are great. Those are very good things. But they don't in any way lessen the need for security in other aspects of the election system. And so in particular, a successful attack on the SVRS or on the electronic poll book systems could prevent eligible voters from ever getting those paper ballots in the first place. The other item I'll point to as having provoked some controversy is that the House version of the bill does not limit the Secretary to the 20 specific items that our working group identified, but provides him some flexibility to spend on other security items that prove necessary. And to that, what I would say is, yes, it's provoked some consternation, but it shouldn't. It's, you know, to use the phrase from software development, it's not a bug, it's a feature that flexibility is there. So let me illustrate with an anecdote. After our working group wrapped up in January, the Department of Homeland Security put out an emergency alert that there was a serious wave of very sophisticated attacks on a core part of the internet infrastructure, the domain name system. This is an election system specific issue. This is a general internet cybersecurity issue. And so the Department of Homeland Security said, here are some mitigation steps that every government agency absolutely must urgently take in face of this new wave of attacks that they saw in January. And it wasn't expensive stuff at all, but it was important. And what I want to say is that if an alert like that were to come out at some point during the next several years, I am quite sure that all of you would want the Secretary to be able to respond to that without coming back to the legislature to say, can we add one more item to our to-do list? Having some flexibility is not a bug, it's a feature. So, with that as background, you've heard that there were 20 specific items we identified in the working group. I know from my years as a teacher there's no better way to get eyes to glaze over than to go down a bullet list of 20 items one by one by one. So I'm not going to do that. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to bring a number of them together into a coherent package. I'm going to touch on 10 of the 20, but I've picked some of the bigger ones. So they total out, using the Secretary's estimates, to $4.9 million, so the majority of the funding. And certainly when I take questions later, if one of your questions is, what about the other 10? Why are they important too? I will answer that question if you have it. So the statewide voter registration system would be any attacker's favorite target. And that's for two reasons. One is that there are a lot of angles from which it can be attacked. And the other is that there's a lot of damage that can be done through it. So when we look at today's statewide voter registration system, which has undergone years and years and years of modifications, all built on technology platforms that have become decreasingly supported. It's a rather rickety structure today, and to ensure it doesn't have vulnerabilities, certainly any expert would advise reworking it. This idea that each module, one by one, gets reworked to modern standards will, among other benefits, lessen its vulnerability. But it's not enough, in order to secure the statewide voter registration system, to just rework that system. Among other things, every county in many cities, as many of you have heard me say, has access to that system. And so if an attacker were to take over control of any of the computers that any of those local election offices uses to connect to the SVRS, they could use that hijacked computer to submit data access requests or data modification requests, which from the perspective of SVRS would look like they were coming from an authorized election official and so would be acted on. And so the SVRS cannot be secured without securing all the local election offices. And it's for that reason that two of the other large items in the working group's proposals address that local level. There's monetary grants to help the local officials make the upgrades they need to. And then there's also the provision of training and consulting services so that they know how to wisely spend that money, and how to change their procedures to improve security. That's what the jargonauts are calling cyber navigators, right? And that reflects that you can't expect each county to hire their own expert. They need to share that resource. So that's in the plan. Those all fit into the sort of prevention area, trying to keep intrusions out of the system. But if you talk to security professionals, none of them will tell you prevention in itself is enough. That just like a physical building has not just locks, but also burglar alarms and cameras, so too, there will always be missing parts in prevention, blind spots. And so you need to have an ability to detect the intrusions that weren't prevented and an ability to respond to them and recover operation. And our leading detection recommendation, it shows up in some of the documents under the name automatic behavioral analysis and in some of the documents under the name database activity monitoring. And the idea is that even if each individual database transaction is innocuous looking, the overall pattern may raise alarm flags. So, for example, if an ordinarily quiet rural county suddenly has thousands of address changes, that would raise a red flag. And if that happened, if you think about it, if that happened in the normal course of operation by thousands of voter registration applications all arriving at that county auditor's office, that human would see that sudden rush of changes of address and say, whoa, we got a problem here. But if it's going to happen not through that channel, but through a cyber intrusion, then we need the database activity monitor to exercise that same kind of vigilance. And when it flags that, when it detects that, it may be able to immediately respond in an automated fashion, shut down the access to some co-opted user's account. But it's also going to send the information to the security information and event monitoring system. That's another of our components of our recommendation. And that's where you get a complete time-stamped log of all the security events that have happened so that when there's an intrusion detected, the cybersecurity investigators can work backward in time and see what else already occurred prior to the moment of detection, so you have a whole picture of what all went wrong. And it's also going to do the automatic alerting. Somebody's pager goes off. You know, the on-call people get called. Then comes the problem, how do you recover normal operation? And that can be complicated because the intruder may by then have modified some of the data, may have modified some of the programs in the system. And they have to get set back to the clean versions from before the intrusion. And today, what that would require is that the Secretary's IT staff would have to go back to the nightly backups that are done and restore the data, restore the programs from the nightly backups, and account for whatever changes have happened since the most recent one. And that's a very time-consuming process. So effectively, you wind up with a denial-of-service attack on the heels of any other attack because the system is offline for an extended period while that recovery process is underway. So another of our recommendations is that we switch to the modern approach of continuous data protection where all the data is backed up all the time and you can instantly go back to any earlier version. So we've got a whole package of software components there working together to give you prevention, detection, and the response and recovery. Those software components themselves need to be protected from subversion, so they need the antivirus component in there, and they all need hardware to run on. If you're going to have all that data backed up all the time, you need more storage devices. If you have all those extra components, you're going to need more servers, more networking hardware. So those are in there too. So what I hope is that, you know, you'll excuse me for taking the time to list all these software and hardware components, but that you'll see them not as individual items, but as mutually reinforcing and interlocking components of a more comprehensive plan. And that's why we need to not just fund one piece of it. That'd be like you build a stool, but you say, we're just going to start with one leg for now. Okay, you can't do that. To make it hold up, you need the package. Okay. I ought to wrap up, but I can't go without addressing one other topic from our list that was outside the SVRSI area, but which I know has attracted some skeptical scrutiny. And that's the provision of greater accessibility. And I know some legislators have looked at that and said, what is accessibility doing in a security bill? And that reflects a very traditional misapprehension that accessibility and security are two separate topics. And that's the mistake even our working group fell into. In reality, election accessibility is just a special subtopic of election security. I know that all of you have had the opportunity to hear Representative Lucero because he spoke both to the Senate committee and on the House floor. And what I hope you remember from Representative Lucero's lecture is that the three principal security objectives are confidentiality, integrity, and availability, CIA. Right? And so if you think about it, those apply at least as much to votes as they do to voter registrations. So what do you want then with CIA for votes? You want that your vote is not disclosed to anyone else, and you want that nobody else can modify your vote, and you want that nobody can stop you from voting. Okay? If you believe in those three basic security objectives as applied to votes, and if you believe that that holds true for every eligible voter, including those with disabilities, then accessibility of voting is not a separate topic, because that's all it means. So thank you. Like the Secretary, I will stick around and be glad to answer any questions.
Well, thank you. Next we have Mr. Zhao. I'm not going to attempt your first name.
It's pretty good, yeah. It's Juming Zhao.
Juming, okay. Welcome.
Hi.
Please state your name for the tape and proceed.
Yes. Hi, everybody. My name is Jiming Zhao. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and other honorable members of this conference committee. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak to you. I'm from Hopkins, Minnesota. So I work for cybersecurity for a large multinational financial institution. I'm not here representing any particular organization, but instead I'm hoping to offer my insights as a cybersecurity professional, as well as an interested citizen of Minnesota. I have 10 years of cybersecurity experience with another 5 years in information technology. I'm a certified information systems security professional, CISSP, and a certified information security auditor, CISA. And my job, my day job as a cybersecurity professional is I lead a team in providing oversight to reduce cybersecurity and also other informational technology governance type risks. I will say right away that I have no special knowledge of the Minnesota election threat landscape per se from a technical or project perspective. I wasn't involved with the working group. But I am confident in saying that many of the adversaries who are trying to breach my company even right now are the very same people attacking our election systems. Everybody in the private sector cybersecurity, we all agree with our DHS agencies and the Secretary of State, the cyber threat is real and it is persistent. But while it is persistent, our adversaries are well-funded and determined, they do not have limitless resources either. And because of this, each bad actor will prioritize a target list sorted from weakest to strongest. The lack of funding signals Minnesota's election systems probably have not been upgraded in a while, and it, which definitely puts Minnesota at the top of the list of targets to be probed. I will say that it probably is not going to result in a direct attack right away, but any reconnaissance, extra scrutiny and reconnaissance that does happen is weakens our posture immensely. And because of this, every day we delay, we become a bigger target and lose critical time to remediate as well. I wanted to say, to echo Professor Halperin when he said that cybersecurity defense is not just about putting in the system, right? It's about maturing an entire ecosystem of the supporting processes, procedures, and the various tools that we need to ensure the best cyber outcome. This principle in the private industry, and I think general security frameworks as well, is called defense in depth. It takes time to build those layers up and to become more and more secure. We need to design, build, test, redesign, and retest as much as possible. And allowing this time is just as essential as the actual funding that this committee is discussing today. So I just want that to be very clear that we're losing time on the clock. And as a private citizen, again, I reviewed the planned outline recommendation from the Secretary of State, and it seems to be very well thought out. It aligns with standard cybersecurity frameworks from the National Institute of Standards and Technology, NIST, and other industry standard security practices in many of the firms that we have here in Minnesota. The cost estimates also seem to be proportional to the gaps that are being addressed. There was nothing that jumped out, at least from from that perspective. Again, speaking as a private citizen and somebody who consumes the news, you know, I can understand that the challenges with MNLARS is probably casting a deep shadow over our state IT initiatives. I understand that and definitely can appreciate that. But I think, you know, at the end of the day, we want the most secure system. And I will say that the two projects are quite different, at least even conceptually, right? Whereas MNLARS was a core process and system rework where they had a lot of changes and a lot of fundamental changes, the cybersecurity upgrade plans proposed are more on the periphery of the systems, except perhaps the election module updates and upgrades. And I'll just give an example, right? So the application that performs the monitoring and collation of security incidents, the Security Incident and Event Management Tool, or SIM, it runs in parallel with the system to be monitored. And because of that, the SIMs generally have a lighter footprint on the overall speed and availability of any source system. A rough analogy would be that Minlars is like, ripping up the 94-394 exchange entirely and putting in a really unproven and untested design, whereas the Secretary of State's plan is more like putting up some security cameras and staffing some police officers on the road to catch a thief that we know will be coming in a year and a half or 2 years. And just to be clear, I am glad that there is oversight being raised by the Senate for this plan. You know, I think a healthy, credible challenge over any particular solution results in better outcomes for everybody. In private industry, we do that all the time. We have competing interests and people that don't agree, and that's great. But I just wanted to be clear that it needs to be done in a way that will allow maximum remediation time. And I fear that the current progression of this bill is somewhat counterproductive to ensuring the best outcome in the end. So with that, I'd like to urge this committee and legislature to pass a bill with the full funding focused on the critical defense of cybersecurity. And if done as soon as possible, I think we, the people of Minnesota, will continue to feel confident about the integrity of our elections. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and honorable committee members, for your time and consideration. I'm happy to answer any questions, and please let me know if I may be of further assistance. Thank you.
Mr. Zhao, are you able to stay?
Oh, yes, I am.
Okay, thank you. And I just wanted to point out for you and for the tape that while Minlars was done with by minute, this is not going to be handled by minutes, so it's going to be separate from that, so hopefully we won't have some of the issues that we had there.
Yes, yeah, and I think, you know, I'm not as familiar with the rules of the committee or the Senate or the legislature. I'm actually learning a lot through this process, so thank you for that. I think just as a citizen, right, it kind of correlates, and no, it's not causation, of course, but, I just wanted to say that they're kind of different beasts, and, you know, we should approach them differently as well.
I understand it. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next we have Pamela Hoops. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the tape, and then you can proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chairman. My name is Pamela Hoops, H-O-O-P-E-S. And thank you for having us here and listening to our testimony. I'm the Deputy Director, Legal Director of Mid-Minnesota Legal Aid's statewide division, which is called the Disability Law Center. And that's the designated protection and advocacy program for people with all kinds of disabilities in Minnesota. We provide free legal advocacy to people with disabilities on civil issues related to their disability. As part of this work, the Disability Law Center receives funding under the Help America Vote Act, or HAVA, to provide nonpartisan education and advocacy to protect the voting rights of people with disabilities. In including this responsibility in the Help America Vote Act, Congress recognized that people with disabilities continue to face barriers to voting despite being eligible voters. As a result, they vote at significantly lower rates than comparable voters without disabilities. So, for example, according to a well-respected Rutgers University study, nationwide, the voter turnout rate of eligible voters with disabilities during the 2016 election was around 6 percentage points lower than that of eligible voters without disabilities. So in that role, I participated in the Office of the Secretary of State's work group that we've been discussing here, putting together the proposals now before you. And in addition to the really crucial cybersecurity features that you've heard about, a smaller portion of the funding under the 20 proposals would be used to increase accessibility of voting for Minnesotans with disabilities. And that is specifically permitted under the Have a Voting proposal and what Congress passed. So it's not an odd add-on. It was one of the permitted uses for the money. And as I'll mention, other states have used some portion of this funding for that purpose. So I would just like to very briefly discuss four of the items out of the 20 that specifically talk about and are related to disability voting. The first is using some of the funding to enhance the accessibility of the Secretary of State's website. If you've ever looked at the website, which probably most of us have, it's really a primary resource for individuals with disabilities and other members of the public for really a vast amount of information about voting. And this proposal would provide funding to increase and enhance accessibility of the website for voters with disabilities, including, for example, by providing information in alternative formats. For example, Connecticut is using some of its HAVA funds to develop online videos for its Secretary of State's website for voters with disabilities to better review and understand how to use the accessible ballot marking systems that are also required under HAVA. In addition, part of this improved web accessibility should include a mobile-friendly web page format. Many people with varied disabilities, including people who are deaf, rely heavily on mobile devices to communicate. And the proposed mobile-friendly web page format, in our view, is an important feature for making the site's information more accessible to voters with disabilities. Second category of accessibility improvements would be in recruiting and training election judges. The Secretary of State's office should dedicate additional resources to assist counties and cities in recruiting election judges and in conducting additional election judge training related to, among other topics, accessibility for voters with disabilities at the polling place. Based on our experience with election judges and poll workers interacting with voters who have disabilities, we've concluded that there is a need for additional training focused on the voting rights of individuals with disabilities. The training should cover not only the law regarding voter eligibility, assistance to voters, and other technical aspects of voting related to voters with disabilities, but also best practices for working with voters who have disabilities to ensure that they're able to exercise their right to vote. Updated training on procedures, rights, and possible accommodations for voters with disabilities will ensure that voters continue to receive the assistance needed. Other states that have included increased poll worker training in their HAVA spending plans specifically related to assisting voters with disabilities include New Jersey, Maine, and the District of Columbia. The third item I'd like to briefly touch on is expanding absentee and mail voting for voters with a disability. Mail voting in Minnesota, whether in all mail jurisdictions or by absentee ballot, is currently not fully accessible to voters with disabilities. All forms of domestic mail voting currently require ballots to be sent to voters in paper form and to be completed manually. Many voters with disabilities related to limited vision cannot independently complete a paper ballot manually. Now, any voter serving the military or living abroad can receive their application via email, mail, or fax. The proposal to make absentee and mail voting for voters in Minnesota who have a disability accessible is both crucial and doable. Accessible absentee and mail voting can be accomplished by either expanding or improving the current process for military and overseas voters, or by purchasing software that will allow voters with a disability to receive and mark their ballot electronically and then return the printed paper ballot to their local election official. Finally, I'd like to mention the proposal to provide sub-grants to local communities for improved election security and accessibility. Based on hundreds of polling place surveys that our office has conducted statewide over the past few years in collaboration with the Office of the Secretary of State, we know that many polling places continue to fall short of being fully accessible to voters with disabilities. The Office of the Secretary of State should use, under the proposal, some of the HAVA funds to improve polling place accessibility. And by providing sub-grants to local jurisdictions, those jurisdictions would then have the needed resources to ensure that voters with disabilities don't face barriers at the polling place. Other states that are using some of these HAVA funds for this very purpose, with this system of local allocation, which allows counties to apply for ADA compliance grants to improve accessibility of polling states, include Iowa, our neighbor state. So thank you for your consideration of these comments, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
And ma'am, can you, Ms. Hanson, can you, or Ms., can you stay to answer questions after we're done with the other testifiers?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next I have Julie Hanson. Welcome to the committee. And please state your name for the tape and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Julie Hanson. I am the property and customer service manager for Scott County. I'm here tonight representing MACO, the Minnesota Association of County Officers. Would also like to let you know that the opinions expressed tonight are reflective of the Association of Minnesota Counties as well. We want to let you know that we did have the opportunity to participate in the work groups that Secretary Simon and his team put together. We support the great end result and want to see these proposals put into action. As far as the reporting requirements go in the Senate version of the bill, our concern is for the load that could be placed on the smaller counties with limited election staff. I'd like to thank Secretary Simon for his testimony, and I would like to let Mr. Zhao know that I in particular appreciate his analogy as a user. As one of the only users, I would imagine, in this room of both MNLARS and the SVRS system, I have a very unique perspective on his analogy, and very much appreciate how he painted the picture for everyone. So I would just like to thank you for the opportunity to testify tonight. I would be more than happy to stick around for any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Thank you. A list here. Next I have Ann Lindstrom. She's already coming up. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the tape.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the conference committee, for allowing me to testify tonight. My name is Ann Lindstrom, and I'm here on behalf of the League of Minnesota Cities. On behalf of our 833 member cities, we ask the legislature to allow the Office of the Secretary of State access to the full funding appropriated by the federal government. We do so for three reasons. One, the time to act is now. Following the 2016 presidential election, the federal government appropriately determined that our country's elections infrastructure must be strengthened. In 2017, funds were distributed throughout the country so that states could get to work. This funding comes with significant reporting requirements and accountability. Minnesota is one of only five states requiring legislative approval to access the funds. And I think that it bears repeating that we are now the only state that has not accessed the funding from the federal government. Cities and counties are set to administer two elections and the presidential primary nomination process in 2020 alone, and we support the full funding so that the OSS can get to work and not have to come back session after session to ask for more. Number two, we believe that voters need reassurance. It's rare that a day goes by that there isn't discussion of election security in the news. We know that Minnesota was targeted in 2016, and we know that ongoing threats are real and that they are increasing. Cities are on the front lines of elections administration. Elections administrators are wholly dedicated to providing the best possible voting experience for those who are eligible to vote. When voters are questioning the security of election equipment and systems, I would argue that they're not having the best voting experience, and worse, they may choose to not participate in an election. The legislature can make it very clear to Minnesotans that the state and local units of government are committed to improving, enhancing, and securing the state's election system by allowing full access to the federal funds versus doling them out in a piecemeal approach. And number three, our members are critical stakeholders. When Secretary Simon convened a working group that has been discussed extensively tonight to determine how best to spend the funds, our members were able to provide input and expertise on what was needed. And now they are very eager to partner with the OSS to implement those plans. So this is not just about allowing access to the Secretary of State. This is about allowing access for local units of government, those who administer the elections. We respectfully ask you to authorize the full funding. Thank you for allowing me to testify tonight, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. And members, we also have a letter that was included in our packets from a Susan Anderson. Susan Erickson, just another Swede, I guess, from New Brighton, Minnesota. And I don't believe she's here, but if you want to look at that, that's she has her points that she put there, and so we include that as the record. And members, the next we have Richard Heller. Richard.
Thank you, Chair.
Proceed. Yeah, state your name for the tape, and then you proceed.
My name is Rick Heller. I officially represent the twice exceptional house file 1370, line 1.18, also known as Minnesota Statute 120B15, and also unofficially represent the people with print disabilities, with one other type of handicapped person, pointing in the Higher Education Act of 2008. Coming here to testify tonight on this HAVA in the House Senate Conference Joint Committee. And I provided some handouts. Hopefully people got to look it over. They are online. However, other documents are not online that other people had for this meeting. Obviously, how they provide them and how quick they provide them also affects how you can put them up quick enough for people to follow along. If I could start with my documents or historically what's happened here. When I started using the read out loud machines some time ago, the process is the county goes to the county, then the county sends the explanation to the state, and then the state can provide actions that they chose to do. So basically what happened here, and I believe this the document that I'm talking about eventually gets down to the one from Secretary of State that you have there dated April 27, 2016. And what triggered that, again, was the complaint I filed against the county. The county said really it's the responsibility for the state, and because of how the law is written federally, it really they felt that it basically fell on the federal. So this was forwarded to the commission, the HAVA commission. And some of the concerns I brought up on the complaint was that, for instance, when I used the machine, when you had a write-in, it would never pronounce it. It only would spell it. That was one thing. Another one was that it wouldn't read quotation marks out loud, and that's on the ballot. Under item two of this page, I believe they expressed to the commission, the federal commission, that that could impact referendum, like the one we might have next year. That would be an example. Item three talks about pre-readers, and as it reads out loud, it's not, again, it's not pronouncing those words. It's only spelling could affect English as a second language. So that's, and then basically the federal government wanted to put me on a task force, and frankly, I says, just fix it. I says, I don't want to be on a task force. You know what's going on here. And that's kind of the, where it landed, and there was no action that I'm aware of. Mr. Black is the counsel for the Secretary of State for Mr. Simon, and we had lots of conversations. You can see that they were working with me. One thing that I found disturbing is the second sheet that starts with Minnesota Office Secretary of State website and posting documents regarding, that's the first line. Obviously, it's not composed the best, but I had an opportunity in civic engagement to be involved in a sonar writing, and I asked these documents be presented, and they found that they were not germane because it wasn't about what they were talking about. It was about people being aware that what party you're going to be voting for will be known to vendors that want to know what party you voted for, and you're going to opt into that for next year. However, because the Secretary of State is exempt from Minnesota Statute 16E.03 Subdivision 9 because it's a constitutional office, they really don't have to apply this. And then when it went to administration law judge over there, you find the third document, which is a screenshot, which states first, above is meant to add a screenshot text for proposal rules and statements of reasonable sonar, so are not fully accessible. So what I was showing there that that struck through an underlying language, and PDFs do not meet accessibility. Minnesota legislature had fixed this about 2 years ago, and I expressed during the tape as well at the Board of Teaching, they did some rule writing as well, that the legislature is more compliant for struck through an underlying language than the board of the new Board of Teaching now and then the administration law judge. So I sent a complaint through Minute to Ms. Puss. She is the chief officer there, administration law judge. No response back from anyone on this. And that's part of the story. I think the word accessibility is very relevant here. Also on page 2, which is not numbered, on a proposal 2. And these machines, you need to consider if these machines want to be compliant to Minnesota Statute 16E.03 Subdivision 9. And if it's relevant enough, if quotation marks on the ballot, as we all know, usually if you have a, or we may know, that quotations are for people that have nicknames such as Jesse Ventura. That was not his legal name. And to have under item 1.13, ADA obviously could be anything that could be access to the buildings, which is very relevant. Yet 16E.03 is access to the printed word and also any notations that are important on the ballot. I had just had a discussion with Mr. Black. I've had three of them. The last one was he may be interested in some grant dollars for a minute if you could put that in there. That you can talk to Jay Wyatt. There's some TAM dollars that are generated on the phone services that everybody has in the state. Perhaps that's something that you can consider accessibility on this. A few other things I've mentioned to Ms. Kiffmeyer, and I've copied her a few times on some of this so she could track it. And she has recognized that she's gotten it. I appreciate her confirmation request. One thing I only orally spoke about was recently is my experience with the machines that currently mark the ballots. It's a perfect cover. It's not indented, and I can say for great certainty that by looking at that, because it's not indented, that it is a ballot by somebody that used the machine. As you know, last year, I believe it was about the size of the ballot, which is very obvious. So that was one suggestion. Another one that was interesting, and if Mr. Simon can correct me if he likes, he's up here, and I expressed to him already that this is not a trial. I don't want this to become a trial, but it's about what went on. The other piece is that the judges, when the machine fails, obviously there's two parties and they read it out loud, yet they're not trained to read quotation marks out, or they're not trained to know how to pronounce the word. And according to Mr. Black, he specifically said that's really their training for them to do that. So if you think about how people can pronounce words, could that be problematic? Yes. And last, maybe a few other things. Ms. Hoops knows about this. I spoke to her. Correct me if I'm not wrong, Ms. Hoops, but I spoke to her at the training that she had at the American Council of the Blind. They had the national convention here, and she was doing a great training there. And she, after the meeting, she said she just didn't have any funding left to advocate for accessibility. And she also attended one of the working groups. And that as well, I believe they had four of them in the process that year. I'm not going to say specific year, but I was there at one of them, and these things were brought up at that working group. There was mention of getting the working group together. I talked to Mr. Black again just last week, and was it this week? Anyways, he said that nothing came out of that. It was Mr. Simon was there and expressing, too, that how that could confuse people with quotation marks as it relates on the referendum ballot. I'm not a linguistic, but... And frankly, I don't plan to be. But anyways, so these are some of the things you might consider, frankly, as you think about what accessibility means, not just to the building, but do you want your machines to be compliant to the accessibility law? Because Mr. Black clearly indicated to me that if we had done a must bill, we wouldn't have any machines working based on those three items that are on the letter that went to HAVA. So that's kind of the gist of it. You're the people that can figure it out. I just let you know I was civically engaged, the best I could possibly be, and being cited, it had an opportunity to experience those things. I'll continue to do that. Obviously, there's other things, but I'm not going to get into the weeds. I think that was enough for tonight. And I'm open to any questions, including the people's names I mentioned tonight.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. And is there anybody else in the audience that would like to testify on before the committee? Please come forward and state your name for the tape and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, my name is Marty Probst.
Can you spell that, please?
P-R-O-B-S-T.
Marty?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you for inviting me, Chairman and Honorable Committee members. I come from the computer world. I've been doing it since 1981. Started working with a little fruit company named Apple. Maybe you've heard of them. And everything in between since then. Targeting and probing of our election systems is nothing unusual. Every one of you here is being probed and targeted if you've got a computer that's connected to the internet constantly. And they're by people that are either hackers or thrill seekers or are enemies and whatever. The system that we have in Minnesota has generally been a non-computer based system. It's been paper oriented, so we've been relatively safe. My recommendation is just keep that as much as possible. There are ways of making it secure. But many of these experts that you'll hear, and I saw it happen with Minlars and a number of other things, is many of these experts are going to try and make it more complicated than it needs to be. The more equipment they sell, the better it is for them. The more software they write, the better it is for them. Many times they're filling in gaps that don't need to be filled in. The information is useful, but not necessarily here. Keeping off the internet is better, and I think most of our systems have been off the internet. My worry with this money that's being spent or is being talked about is not being discussed to be spent in a bipartisan way. Vetting and all of that stuff doesn't really protect us from the fact that one person who's got a political side or bent or whatever is going to spend the money. It should be one from each party that actually spends the money and oversees the election in the interest of making it fair. I'm all about making elections fair. I don't believe they are, and I'm not saying either party is necessarily clean or dirty, but I do believe there's opportunity in the current system for people to influence votes or add votes or whatever. We can make this bipartisan and make it fair, but I don't hear many people talking about that. From the standpoint of, I currently work with top professionals in the industry. I'm working on a project with the DOD, people that are working with the NSA and other three-letter agencies. There's a way to make these secure, and it's incredibly simple. It doesn't have to be complicated. Part of the reason we're all vulnerable to attacks is because we all use common protocol, every one of us. If I find your server or I find target server, I can go on the internet and find software that can get into your server. That's how target was accessed. There's also third-party vendors come into some of these systems and drop a virus and whatever. We can prevent that simply with the election systems by not allowing outside vendors or input and so forth. That's easily taken care of. It doesn't have to be complicated. And that's what I'm worried about is government is classically doesn't know this, and I understand that. And they think, oh, some expert come along, and you can find all kinds of experts that'll tell you, oh, this works or that works, whatever. The more complicated, the better it is for the vendors. So my contention is do not spend this money unless it's a bipartisan oversight that actually approves every single nickel that's spent. That way we're going to get fair use of it and not have it used in the wrong way. I got a couple of notes here. So bottom line is keep it simple and please have bipartisan oversight. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And is there anybody else? I see another gentleman in the back there. Welcome to the committee.
Good evening, Honorable Chairman and members of the committee.
Please state your name for the tape. And
sure. I'm Don Evanson. That's with an A, E-V-A-N-S-O-N, not usual in the Midwest. I'm a lifelong resident of an outstate, greater state county, Winona County, and now in the Winona County portion of 21B, except for my military service. My wife was a town clerk for many years, and she and I have served as election judges, and I've been election judge a number of times, and been a recount election judge a number of times, or sat in as a recount observer. So I have some experience in this area. I've become concerted with the changes in the election guides and the election judge manuals I've seen implemented over the last 10 plus years. I think much of the public is also duly skeptical over election integrity, and some of that derives from what I've seen. Sure, we must be very concerned about election integrity and cybersecurity. It could be even that we are not projecting to spend enough money in the area of cybersecurity. However, to echo Mr. Probst's concerns, any money spent for cybersecurity should receive full bipartisan oversight, including a team of bipartisan cybersecurity experts. Anything that's developed in that area needs bipartisan eyes on it if we're going to have confidence in the election integrity of our state. I'm concerned not only with integrity, cybersecurity threats, international cybersecurity threats, but also domestic, including intrastate and interstate cybersecurity threats. And we need to keep a watchful eye on that. I sat on the committee hearing this morning, chaired by Mary Kiffmeyer, her Government Finance Policy and Elections Committee, and heard testimony that some of the agencies are too protective of their own IT turf. And that was coming from the director of Minnesota IT. And that may very well have election integrity repercussions that we need to be concerned about. We need to stick with paper ballots and return to the practice of all absentee ballots going in the envelope sealed by the voter back to the precinct so that we certainly have bipartisan eyes on the absentee ballots. We heard someone testify that it's good to have human interaction with the paper ballots because then we can see what's going on with it. Beyond the skepticism of cybersecurity and lack of integrity issues, Minnesota should not be only one of the few states that does not use provisional ballots. We need to do that, people. Please get that done. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, sir. Anybody else that would like to speak to the committee? I see no one coming forward. And I think I was remiss at the beginning of the meeting to have everybody introduce themselves. It was kind of a rush getting over here from the end of session. So I, at this time, starting with Senator Kiffmeyer, you want to introduce yourself and we can go around the table and so we know who we're working with.
Hello, everyone. I'm Senator Mary Kiffmeyer. Glad to be with you tonight.
Paul Carlson, Committee Administrator.
Andrew Erickson, Senate Fiscal Analysis.
Lexi Stengel, Senate Counsel.
Senator Mark Coran.
Senator Jeff Howe.
Amina Safi, DFL Research.
Brian Cook, House Republican Caucus Research.
Representative Bob Vogel.
Representative Raymond Dean, my apologies. I had a bill up in another committee, but now that's done and I'm back to stay.
Hope it went well.
It did.
Helen Roberts, House Fiscal Staff.
Sydney Spreck, Committee Legislative Assistant.
Mac Herring, Nonpartisan House Research.
Jim Geldman, House Committee Administrator.
Well, thank you. We also had in the packet, there was some from change.org, as the top of it says looks like a petition here that was in the packet that for your reading. So with that, questions of the people that have testified. Do you have a question?
No, I don't have any questions.
Any members have questions of people that testified? I guess I have one. I asked the Secretary of State. He had talked to me earlier about he had a list of how he was going to spend the money, and he passed that out. This brochure here, it says Auditing Subcommittee Proposal. Secretary Simon, if you want to come forward or you and your staff, and you can explain this and go down this.
Mr. Chair,
Representative
Vogel. I'm not sure we have that. Or do we?
Can you get us?
Oh, I'm sorry, yes.
Can the page get us? Well, he found it. Yep. Does everyone have that? Secretary Simon, and I see Mr. Halperin. Our Halperin is up there also, and you can identify yourself for the tape so we know who we're talking with.
Yeah. Larry Olson, I'm the Director of Cybersecurity for the Secretary of State's office.
Gary Olson?
Larry.
Larry, okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Secretary Simon.
Thank you. I will try to go through this quickly, especially for the benefit of the poor senators who heard me do some version of this the other night in Senator Kiffmeyer's committee. So for their benefit and everyone's, I'll do an extra short version. But just going through the 20 proposals, the first one I think may not be in your packet, but it's the big one, which is strengthening and securing and modernizing the SVRS, the statewide voter registration system. I think we all understand what that is. And this is done by subcommittee. As I mentioned, there were five subcommittees as part of the working group that met from June or July through late November. The second subcommittee is, as you mentioned, Mr. Chair, the auditing subcommittee, and there were a couple proposals there. I'll just summarize. One is to engage an outside expert to analyze post-election reviews, including unadjusted differences, et cetera. This is something that security experts, a lot of them, have identified as a real need with the system. The second one is engaging an outside consultant to thoroughly examine and audit the security of information being moved between the office and other agencies and entities. Mr. Halperin testified to this, the sense that a lot of information, some of it very sensitive, moves among those who participate in election administration, and that is a potential, frankly, vulnerability, and we need to have that assessed, and we need to address that. That's something that federal intelligence officials have emphasized to us and to others repeatedly. Under the e-poll book subcommittee proposals, there were two. One is that we enhance mail voting for voters with a disability. In fact, there's a bill floating right now around to do that as well, which would be a companion to this. The second one is the sub-grant proposal. This is one that I'm sure the representative of local government in the room, Ms. Lindstrom and others speaking on behalf of the cities and counties and townships, really care about a lot. We want to make sure that this is about the entire system, not just the Office of Secretary of State. And to that end, this portion would devote a substantial amount of this money to make sure that local governments can get some direct aid as well. Under the HAVA, under the communications subcommittee proposal, there were three. The first one is to invest in or develop contacts with a third-party vendor to secure sensitive information and data exchanges between counties and the office, a little bit like what we talked about before. You can read for yourself some of the many forms that this would take. The second proposal was enhancing website security and accessibility. This would make sure that all the pages of the website were accessible to those who have a disability. It includes some examples listed there. The third one has to do with recruiting and training election judges. We heard a lot about this from local units of government. The townships, the cities, the counties, and security professionals have said this, too, is a way to enhance our security. Under the cybersecurity subcommittee proposal, there were several, 12 to be precise. The first one is the automatic behavioral analysis. A couple of the testifiers talked about that, the database activity monitoring software, or DAM software. The second one is network segmentation, making sure that if one area of the office is compromised, that it's segmented so it doesn't sort of infect the other area of the office. The third one is SIEM software, Security Information and Event Management software, and you can read the description for yourself there. The fourth one was next generation antivirus software. This was one in particular that the Department of Homeland Security was very concerned about, and you can see the description there for yourself. The fifth one was PAM, privileged access management, and making sure that we had an automated system that ensures the right of users to have the right access at the right time. The sixth proposal was an infrastructure upgrade. This has to do with, frankly, the additional capacity that Professor Halperin talked about. Proposal seven was additional network storage and backup storage. Same kind of thing there. That's self-explanatory. Number eight was data core continuous data protection, CDP. Which provides automatic captures of data on network storage for recovery in the event of data corruption or ransomware infection. Proposal 9 is cybersecurity training for counties and cities. This is the Cyber Navigator proposal, and I will tell you that a number of the states that have already received their money, well, all of them received their money, but a number of them have done this. Illinois, New Jersey, I think Ohio, I think Nevada. Those are just the ones that come to mind which have done this. And as Professor Halperin quite rightly said, we can't expect, and it wouldn't be efficient to have every county hire an expert, particularly, as I like to say, and some of you have heard me say this, but for the record again, only 9 counties in Minnesota have full-time, year-round, election-only people. In the vast majority of the state, many of your districts, the person who's the county auditor or auditor-treasurer wears many hats. He or she may do inspection work, property taxes, ditch and drainage work, and elections is just one of their responsibilities. They don't have, you know, an independent, freestanding elections group that does only elections, let alone election security. So this would be a way to have shared expertise for all the counties in the state so that no matter where you live, doesn't matter your zip code, population density, you're just as secure as other Minnesotans. Number 10 is the additional licensing for system scanning and testing. That's pretty self-explanatory, and some of the technical experts here can go into greater detail. Proposal 11, this is one particularly that the Department of Homeland Security emphasized to us, not only in their on-site visit, but have generally at conferences and meetings said that this is something they highly recommend. The idea of having a policy writer, this is only a six-month deal. This isn't a forever position. This isn't creating some autopilot, you know, FTE in state government. This is a limited engagement, someone who can codify and put in writing some of the practices and procedures that we already have, as well as the others that we will be adopting. And finally, ongoing support for multi-factor authentication. Many of you know what this is. This is something that we adopted, even though we didn't have to. We did that. We absorbed the costs, so we didn't have to pass them along to counties. And this would reimburse us and help us sustain long-term multi-factor authentication. That is a very quick, perhaps too quick, summary of the 20 different recommendations. So I'd be happy to stand for questions, but I think you'd get a lot more from your questions by asking the two gentlemen to my left and my right who have a lot of experience and expertise in this area.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was wondering if we could take a recess. We've been here a lot longer than you.
I understand, yes.
So we're ready for a recess.
How long of a recess would you like?
A little while. Make it 10 minutes or so.
That sounds good. Why don't we come back at 10 after 9, take a 15-minute recess. So right now we're in recess. Sorry about the session going on. You know how it goes. People got to talk. And all the time. Everything's been said, but not by everybody. And they still keep doing it. The federal language, but included but not limited, they were afraid that it would open up too much freehand to the Secretary of State. I guess I'm okay with getting rid of that, but they would solve their issues. Yeah. It's, what's that?
I don't know.
You don't have any issue with that. From one of the talks I've had with him, it's a start that doesn't start getting in.
Like you grab it when it's available, but if it's not available, you don't do it.
So we're in between there. Do you want to go? I know we've got the authorization almost 1.5, and you're at 1.5. Where in between there do you want to go? Or do you just want 1.5 to start? I don't think that's enough to get him started, because from what little I know and talking to people I know that are computer experts, that just basically gets the system and doesn't do a lot for the other parts of it, the accessibility, which is if you heard here tonight, getting the training, getting the money to some of the locals so they can do what they've got to do. This doesn't get at that.
I went out to Hava when they
finished the system, what they want.
Somebody turned down the cold air.
It feels, you feel it on your legs.
Yeah, it was getting really warm. Yeah, well, I brought some. Well, they turned the lights on.
Yeah, the system shuts off at night, you know.
Yeah. Kind of a little hint. Kind of a little hint.
Yeah, I mean, you do that to save money, but it's, yeah, it's only a light game.
I suppose. Right, when it's a little drafty.
Yeah, they used to shut the heat off on the weekend, yeah, and then turn it back up on Monday morning.
Oh my god, a setback. It goes back. It goes to 60 degrees. Then you're at home, and then you rise. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
What's that, Zeros what?
Nick Zeros, his drawer.
Oh, that's a 10,000-calorie drawer.
Yeah, the candy.
Did you hear about the one time when, I don't remember just when it was, over the weekend maybe, one of the other reps, I think it was Deb Keel, she took all the candy out and put bananas.
Oh, nice.
And fruit.
I think this called back to order. I was hoping Senator, or Secretary Simon, yeah. It's been late. There we go. Yeah. Okay. Secretary Simon, this list here, you showed me a list that had dollars to it the other day. Do you have that with you here?
Yeah, Mr. Chair and members, yes. Julie Strather is just getting copies for everyone right now.
Okay.
I would just say, by way of explaining the document and filling a little time here, that is a list of estimates, as I think Mr. Olson can tell you, and as many people here know, a lot of those things have to go out to bid. We don't know what an RFP is going to show, but they're reasonable estimates that people on the working group would look at. So it could be higher, they could be a little lower. It's hard to say on some of these things, but they're reasonable estimates.
I think it's coming around now. I saw this because it kind of breaks down this. If you do this, this is what it estimated to cost, and sort of like getting an estimate on your house. I can remodel my kitchen. If I do this, it's going to cost this much. I can add this, and it's going to cost that much. And I think that would give us an idea of what we can and can't do or what we're looking at.
Mr. Chair, did you have some other information that you wanted to talk about?
I guess the question I have for you, Senator Kiffmeyer, is... we talked a little bit before, at the end of the session here, and where we can move or where we can go. If there's a number in between the two that we could settle on, I know there's some members of my caucus had some concerns during the negotiations or the passing of the bill on the floor on the House side of the side by side lines 1.9 to 110, the including but not limited to any of the following activities, that there were some issues with that from our members on the House, that was kind of opening up too wide for the Secretary or for whoever was running this to not limiting it down to what they were concerned about. And I want to know if you had concerns with that yourself or where you're at with this.
Well, I would say the most important thing is that what we bipartisanly agree to is the $1.534 million that we can settle on tonight. get it agreed to, get that money to the Secretary of State to meet the most critical need that they have testified to, and that is, I think, the focus that I have. Is that something we can get done tonight and has been well gone through and testify that it's most critical? That is the focus that I believe we have the greatest agreement on.
And Secretary Simon, where at the 1.5, where are we looking at and what can we get with the 1.5?
Well, Mr. Chair and members, the 1.5 is to modernize and upgrade the statewide voter registration system. As we've said before, it's hiring three people for 4 years to do coding. And while essential, the analogy from before holds, you don't want to buy a house or buy a car without locks on it. So just going with a 1.5 for that builds a system or recodes a system without providing the vital protections for that very system, and you don't want to do that. That defeats the purpose. So we see, as Professor Halperin already mentioned, all of these working together. They're not easily severable in that way, and so it's a real danger just to stop at that. I just want to say again for the record, all 49 other states have all of the money, no strings attached from any legislature, from anyone. There's vigorous federal oversight. We need to track our time in 15-minute increments. We need to do periodic reporting. We already have been doing it, and we'll continue to do it to the Election Assistance Commission, which is the federal agency in charge of overseeing this money and distributing this money. So there's plenty of federal oversight already. You know, I haven't heard a rationale for I haven't heard an explanation, I should say, for opposition to any of the particular areas that we've talked about today, the other 19. So if there's any member of the conference committee or anyone here who has a particular problem with any of the other 19 recommendations of the group, I think tonight would be, I think it's a reasonable request that anyone tonight would enunciate those concerns. Is there something that shouldn't be on that list? Maybe something that's not on the list that should be on the list? We're all ears.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would like to mention that
Senator Kickmeyer.
Yes, that on the it's not just the statewide voter registration system. It also includes and for cybersecurity upgrades as authorized by federal law. And by federal law, and that is available appropriation to March 23rd, 2023. So the immediate money can be used both for the beginning part of the state voter registration system and for cybersecurity upgrades. If they choose to use a portion of that to do that, it's not restricted to the state voter registration system.
Representative Dean, you had a question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And as I look at this list of the approved proposals and the dollar amounts related to them, I mean, I just picked out five things that sort of seem critical of them, that being secure and modernize the state voter registration system, which is just under $1.5 million. The recurring cost of cybersecurity initiatives, which is $310,000. The cybersecurity training for counties and cities, and the cyber navigator, which is close to $1 million. And then looking at a couple others that seem to make a lot of sense that we do them now would be the secure information sharing with counties and cities, which is $200,000, and the post-election review study, which is the auditing component, which I believe we think we want to have auditing taking place in our elections. And I did the simple math without a calculator, so it could be off a little bit. But I came to that's like $3 million just right there. And if we're proposing to stop at just what's was agreed upon in both bodies and both bills, I still think we fall woofully short of what is really necessary for the Secretary of State to really do the kind of work that we want to do. I mean, we have an election just around the corner. And the longer we put this off, I think the more we put the office in disadvantage. So I'm just throwing that out as a few things that I think are really, really critical. And I don't want to, you know, cherry pick every little thing. But those are just a few of the things that I think are critical and I think that might give us a starting point. And seeing as how I don't know all the intricacies of all of these types of things, I'm going to be honest. You know, this has not been my sort of deep suit relative to the legislature. But
you know, even if we added another $1 million to that to allow the Secretary of State to, you know, do those types of things to get us moving as we move forward, and then look at the remaining, you know, roughly $2.5 million at a later date, closer to the end of session or something like that. That would seem to make sense to me.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Corn.
Yeah, that's fine.
Sorry for promoting you.
Thank you. So with the 1.5, I mean, it was clearly stated in committee that the 1.5 million takes care of that immediate need so you can get rolling on the – I don't think we heard it in committee that it was three people for four years. So kick that off. We can get that off. It includes cybersecurity. And we're prepared to do that tonight. And so I think we've agreed on that. You've stated that it was the top priority. We can do that. There's still 40-some days left in session. Let's secure what we can. We'll secure the entire dollar amount. The Senate file does take care of that. So I say we move forward and let's get the $1.5 million secured, all the funds secured, and get that $1.5 million allocated for the most critical needs.
Well, Senator Coran, problem I have with that, just at the 1.5, is we did have an amendment on our floor, and that was roundly rejected, that dollar amount. Mm-hmm. Actually, the whole language here, and I'm willing to give on some of this, but that language and with that dollar amount was soundly rejected by overall House floor. And if we bring it back to the House floor with that amount, I don't see us passing that. So, I mean, that's why I'm asking, trying to figure out what we can do in between this and moving forward with that.
Mr. Chair, I think as well as even the Senate file does one thing, and along with the allocation of most critical needs, but the Senate file is the only one that does match and secure all of the funds. And I understand you must have had a thorough process on the floor, but we're kind of curious how did it leave the floor without securing all of the funds? That was critical. So we met the two critical objectives, which were secure all of the funds and secure the activities, which are cybersecurity, and the upgrade of the statewide voter registration system, and I think our bill does that.
Well, Senator Coran, the securing the additional funds, the 163, I believe what you're speaking about is the additional funds for that, is that according to the way the law was written, the federal laws, we do not have to come up with that money till next March. That's and right. My understanding is that the budget recommendation or the budget that we've been given, the request from the Secretary of State's office has that money in it. So that would be being secured by the end of session when we pass the Secretary of State's budget. So therefore, we would be securing that money also, just not currently in this bill because it's going to count against the budget targets that we receive in our House.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Coran, Senator Coran.
Yeah, that's right.
It's
we're good. We're good. Don't worry about it. And that's part of it. You know, so this is the budget year, so this is the year to get take care of and spend the additional $163,000 and allocate it and secure all of the funding. So,
well, Mr. Chair,
Senator Kiffmeyer,
why wait? Why wait to secure that match? We've got it right now. Why put it off till another time like that when it's right here in front of us, and it's $163,000. It's been old, and then it's which I think, you know, the is a very important component of this.
Senator Howe,
thank you.
I want to ask or say something, and I'll answer Senator Giffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess my concern is if we're if you're not going to secure the money, are you talking we're going to spend the money that we're not securing? We're actually going to authorize spending dollars that we don't have and we're not securing? I'm not comfortable with spending money that we don't secure. And that's why I believe the Senate file actually does everything we need to do at this time.
Senator Kiffmeyer, as we talked offline as we were going to break, and I know that's going to count against our target. So I mean, like I said, it was part of the Secretary of State's budget. the 163 is, to me, is not a sticking point, if that's the sticking point. But at 167,000, we've already secured more than half of the match, and yet we're only appropriating well under half of the money, a third of the money, rough math. I mean, so we've already secured more than enough money. If we go with your proposal, we've secured more than what we're willing, what you're willing to spend on that, on this, for cybersecurity and upgrading the system. Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, when we talk about, you know, we have the resources, it's here, it's ready to be spent. My understanding is we have the $6.5 million here, and it's ready to be spent. And while you can argue that, you know, $1.534 million is part of the $6.59 million, there's still a huge portion of that that's missing. And if our goal is to actually get these funds in place, and, you know, maybe I haven't been around long enough to know how conference committees work. But ultimately, I would say that the opportunity to find some space in the middle exists. And like I said, I just picked out, you know, what I thought were five critical areas, which, you know, got us to $3 million. Now, you know, I understand that the Senate did not pass the full $6.595 million, but, you know, I think the goal of the conference committee is for us to work out the differences, not just to say, well, we like what the Senate has, and we're just going to take what they give us because, you know, they have what they would say is maybe a stronger position in talking about this. You know, I know there's a lot of concern about how the money's getting appropriated, what type of accountabilities we have, and all those types of things. And we have the, you know, Secretary of State right here right now, and if those are primary concerns, I think we should start asking him those questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I think the most important thing
Senator
is, thank you, Mr. Chair, in working through what we have right here now, I know you have expressed concern on the floor, and to me as well, concern about the voter records, Section 1, I believe it is, that you expressed concern about those two sections.
Senator Kiffmeyer, yeah, as I expressed, I've had local election officials come to me and express concern about that. Yes, some of this is current language, but the Secretary of State does do the reporting on this. The issue has been that in the past, or not in subdivision 5 here with the, I'll get the right spot here, where it talks about 2 weeks to provide this information. There's been some concerns with local elected officials that's squeezing them, especially some of the smaller ones. But to me, it's the more the where we start with the dollar amount. As that 1.5, I don't believe is enough, and was wondering, well, I guess, where we can go with this. I prepared a proposal, and why don't we hand that out, which basically would get us, and we're going to end up someplace halfway in between here, halfway between your proposal and my proposal for our proposal for the money. When I say mine, it was my bill, but our proposal for the money and agreeing to the $163,000. And there's some language that was in the House bill that I know the Republicans in the Minnesota and the House had some issues with, and I was willing to let that language go. Like I said, the including but not limited to language on line 1.9 and 1.10 of the House bill. But instead of the 6.59 or 6.6, just slightly over $4 million. If we can give the Secretary a copy of this, I think, like I said, eventually we're going to end up halfway in between here. This is something I'm putting out as an olive branch or as a negotiating, that why don't we go at halfway in between and we can get this started and off the floor tonight.
Well, Mr. Chair, taking a look at this, this is not an acceptable offer to us. And so I think I will have a chance to take a look at it. But I'm always amazed at the fact that we have about 45 days here in regards to cybersecurity and the most critical needs at getting, we have the opportunity to get that done right now tonight. But if you like, we can step aside again and take time with to review it.
And Secretary Simon, at the 1.5, would that get cybersecurity done, or are we just talking about bare bones building of the system?
No, I think 1.5 without the rest of it yesterday is putting us at risk. And I just have to say, there's a talking point, and that's what it is, about, well, we've secured the system. I've seen that on social media. I want to be on the record. The Senate bill secures nothing. The Senate bill secures nothing by giving the match. We have, as Representative Dean said, $6.6 million sitting in an account at MMB for our use. Securing the money would be giving the money. So if anyone asks me, I'm going to say that bill secures nothing. It secures $1.5 million. That's it. So I don't know whether that provision of the match was added to, you know, I don't know why it was added, and I won't speculate. But it's not securing everything. I just want to debunk that talking point. It is securing nothing.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Steinmeier.
Okay. Probably the most important thing is sometimes the use of words. So our reference is the 5% match. Securing the 5% match, which is required by federal law, in order to make use of the money that is in the Help America Vote Act account. If we do not provide the 5% match, then whatever is deficient does not mean then we are authorized to appropriate, spend, or make use of that, because the criteria is to meet the 5% match. And that is, securing that match is part of securing the funds so that they stay here in Minnesota, that we keep them here in our account, and we don't put at risk missing a critical deadline and making sure that we have that 5% match put together. And that's what our bill does. Make sure we have that 5% match to those funds that are in that Help America Vote Act account are secured and stay here. That is our position.
And Senator Simon, when do we have to have that 5% match done by?
That 5% match would be due March 23rd, 2020. So we have a little over a year to get that. And one other thing, just for the record, Mr. Chair, unlike the HAVA funds that went before, that Senator Kiffmeyer got when she was Secretary Kiffmeyer, here, Congress said you can go ahead and spend the money before you get the match. So getting the match, as Senator House seemed to imply, is not a prerequisite for spending the money. I want to repeat that here. It was that way in 2003, 4, and 5. It isn't now. You must eventually get the match. But we could, if we got the $6.6 million, theoretically, we could spend it in a day as long as we got the match a year from now. I just want to make that clear. It's not a prerequisite. You don't need the match in order to, and as a condition of spending the money up first. And Congress was very intentional, and President Trump was very intentional about that, because the idea was to get the money to the states in time for the 2018 election. That was the plan. That's what 49 other states had the opportunity to do, except for Minnesota.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair,
I just
want to mention that it is amazing that we would even consider waiting till March 23rd on that kind of a deadline. $163,000 out of a $47 billion budget is really very, 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 very tiny. It's incredible to think that we would actually put ourselves in that situation when there's language right here tonight for $163,000 that ends that whole question. It just takes care of it.
And Senator Kiffmeyer, if you look on the offer that was here, I guess is the best way to say it. If you look on page 2.17 of the offer, the $163,000, the match is there. So I mean that. So we're quibbling over that piece. That's there.
Mr. So, Chair, I wasn't. It was that it was brought up, and I so wanted to make it clear, and that's all.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Coran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Secretary Simon, the urgency to secure, you know, an amount greater than what was testified in state gov elections was $1.5 million, and it was affirmed. You have a million-dollar budget deficiency as well as the, $1.3 million in legal fees that you have that are piling up. Is there a solvency issue with the agency through the end of the budget year, the fiscal year?
Senator Simon.
Mr. Chair and Senator Coran, no, there's no solvency issue. What you're referring to is some legal fees that the state of Minnesota owes, but it accrues to our office in the sense that we were named a defendant. Our office doesn't owe the money. The state of Minnesota owes the money for a lawsuit that went to the U.S. Supreme Court that was started in 2010, so many years ago. But no, there's no issue for our budget.
Thank you.
Senator Coran.
Thank you.
So, Senator Kiffmeyer, do you want to look at this and come back tonight, or what is your intention?
Well, I would say our intention is that right now, tonight, we are able to get this done. My biggest concern is to do this on an immediate basis. 1.534 gets cybersecurity, gets the SVRS in the process of hiring. Even in the next 45 days, those are things that can be set in motion and can be done immediately. But if you would prefer, I'd be glad to step out and talk with my members here, but and give you a chance to do so as well.
Representative Bean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've spent a lot of late nights here the past couple weeks, and I'm curious, in conference committee, what are the rules on how late we can meet on a night?
Mr. Representative Dean, it's my understanding, I'll ask Mr. Gehring, but it's my understanding we can't meet past midnight on a committee, but maybe conference committees are different. Mr. Gehring.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dean, so the joint rules of the House and Senate provide that the conference committee can meet till midnight, and then it can vote by two-thirds vote to extend that period by 1 hour.
Representative Dean.
Mr. Chair, seeing as how we all have this in front of us, I'd like to move the DE2 amendment, and I would ask for a roll call.
Motion's been made to approve the DE2 amendment, and a roll call's been asked. And we'll get the – there we go, get ready for that. The clerk can take the roll.
Roll call vote on amendment DE2. Chair Nelson?
Aye.
Chair Kiffmeyer?
No.
Representative Dean?
Aye.
Representative Vogel?
Yes.
Senator Coran?
No.
Senator Howe?
Nay.
Representative Vogel? Two A's and three nays.
So, Senator Kiffmeyer, do you want to recess?
Yes.
For, say, a half hour?
15 minutes.
15 minutes, okay. Come back at 10 o'clock. We are in recess. Okay. Call this back to order here. Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to make the offer that we can do right now tonight. By Monday, the Secretary of State would have over $1.5 million to start on the most critical work of cybersecurity and the other items that have been previously mentioned and the use of this SVRS upgrade. Right now, tonight, Mr. Chair, we can do that. I'd like to make the motion of the Senate language is our offer. I'd like to ask for a roll call.
Motions are made to just the Senate language. And a roll call has been asked for. And the clerk can take the roll.
Chair Nelson?
No.
Chair Kiffmeyer?
Yes.
Representative Dean?
No.
Representative Vogel?
Yes.
Senator Coran?
Yes.
Senator Howe?
Aye.
Representative Vogel? Yes?
Pass.
That's three A's and two nays.
So we're right back at the beginning.
Well, Mr. Chair, if you think it would be helpful, we could delete the voter records sections.
As it sits with that, with the dollar amount and that out, again, that is something that I don't think I can bring back to the House, that we could get passed in the House. And I guess I don't know how late we want to go and sit here at an impasse tonight. I guess the question I have, if we adjourn for tonight, tomorrow, then the gavel passes to you. Are you planning on calling a meeting tomorrow?
Well, my plan is to get money in the hands of the Secretary of State and the most critical functions that he has, and that we can do that. And we could take care of that tonight, and we would all be completed with it and be able to get those funds going forward. The Senate is firm.
And Senator Kiffmeyer. Secretary Simon, would that be enough?
No, and I just want to say I think what's happening here is a really dangerous game that's being played, and you don't have to take my word for it. Talk to the Department of Homeland Security and the intelligence folks. And the IT folks, including the two gentlemen who are sitting next to me, will tell you these things can't be done with a flip of a switch. So 40-some days, 50-some days, that puts us even more behind, and that's time that can't be made up easily. In fact, it's not one for one. You can't necessarily make up 40 days that you haven't gotten with an additional 40 days. If the thinking here somehow is, well, as long as we get this done by the end of the session, everything's going to be fine for 2020, that's not true. This puts us at risk. The fact that we're the only state in the country not to have all of its money puts us at risk. Use your common sense. If you're a wrongdoer out there, are you going to try first with one of the 49 states who you know has gotten the money? Or might you try first with the one state that you know hasn't gotten the money? We know where the vulnerabilities are. We know what the threat assessments are. We've gotten the intelligence briefings. And we know what we have to do. The $1.5 million is a start, but it's not sufficient. And so I guess I would ask a question, Mr. Chair, if it's appropriate, of Senator Kiffmeyer, which is, you have said in the past, you've been on the record in the media and elsewhere saying that you have questions. Are you willing tonight to share with us what some of those questions are? That's the first question. Well, I'll just leave it at that. Senator Kiffmeyer, could you tell us what some of your questions are?
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Mr. Chair, it is not a custom of the Senate to have the testifier be quizzing chairs. I appreciate your comments, Secretary Simon. And I know you have your roots in the House, but that is not where we are coming from.
Well,
and I would say, Mr. Chair, that the agreed to and bipartisanly agreed to language, money that can be done right now, right here, and we can get a start. That is what we have pledged and committed to. This is a sizable chunk of money towards the S-VERA system and cybersecurity that is ready to go right now. Those funds are ready to go right now. 1.5 through Thor is a sizable chunk of money.
Mr. Chair, if I may.
I didn't hear
an answer to my question, so I'll ask them rhetorically. And if Senator Kiffmeyer doesn't wish to answer the questions for protocol reasons, she doesn't have to do that, but I think a lot of people, including in the media, are going to be interested. Number one, what are her questions? Number two, if the committee were to do as she in the Senate position reflects tonight, what is the method by which she will attempt to fulfill Leader Gazelka's promise of getting the $6.6 million? Will she tonight commit to a hearing, to the vetting and the screening that Senator Gazelka talked about, or will she not commit to doing any of that tonight?
Well, Secretary Simon, I guess that's a question I have, and maybe I'll ask the question Chair Kiffmeyer, is that if we adjourn tonight, and when are we going to have the next meeting? The gavel goes back every day, 24 hours. It goes back between the House and the Senate. We could call a meeting for Saturday if you don't want to call one for tomorrow. I don't really, with the weather coming in the way it is, I really don't want to do that. The gavel would then go back to the Senate on Monday, and then Tuesday the gavel would come back to the House. So I guess where are we at on this? I mean, I can't bring only 1.5 million back to the House. That's not going to pass. And I can't sell that to them.
Well, I would say, Mr. Chair,
Senator Kiffmeyer,
what I've heard requested here tonight is in regards to we do the 1.5 tonight, and I think the question is, what about the rest? And yes, my intention would be to have we had a cursory look, which actually invited more questions from our members. They expressed concerns. They have a lot more questions. This is one-time money. It is taxpayer money. It doesn't belong to us. It belongs to the taxpayers. And so the immediacy of getting this accomplished tonight and the balance of the funds will get that thorough process that we will do. And having accomplished that, come to language that would be in the state government finance bill that would take care of the balance of the funds.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm sitting here and I'm trying to understand when we talk about the magnitude of dollars, because a few minutes ago Senator Kiffmeyer said that $163 million is 5% of the allotted money. And that's a very, 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 very small amount of money when you consider it in the context of the state budget. And I'm paraphrasing. I may not be saying it exactly. And at the same time, we hear that $163,000 is a very, very small amount. And then we hear that $1.5 million is an incredibly large amount of money. But relative to the state budget, it might just be one less in when we're talking about a very, very small amount. And, you know, I still go back to, we've got this money. This money has been appropriated to the state to use to protect our elections. And I think the longer that we sort of continue to encumber that money and not allow the Secretary of State to actually utilize it to secure our elections, I think in the end that puts all of us sort of on the line that we're not doing our jobs. And I understand that, you know, the thought is, well, we can get him started and can get the office started, but I'd like to get the office finished, because in the end, I don't know a lot about cybersecurity, but I'm guessing the more holes that you don't close up, the more likely it is to have someone be able to break into our system. So I'm just trying to understand, is $163,000 very, very small, but once we multiply that, you know, by 10 times, it becomes very, very, very large. So I would like an explanation to try to understand how we're conceptualizing this money, because we're going to spend a lot of time talking about the dollar amount, it seems like. And I'd like to know what sort of are the parameters and how we're going to be, you know, sort of anchoring what we're talking about when it comes to the appropriation of this funds.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Well, I think it's a matter of when I was speaking, I was comparing $163,000 to the general fund. Mm-hmm. The difference here is $1.534 million is compared to the Secretary of State annual budget. The Secretary of State's annual budget is about $7 million, maybe 7.2, somewhere in that range. So 1.534 as a portion of the Secretary of State's annual budget is a large sum for that office.
Mr. Chair. Representative Dean.
I certainly understand, Senator Kiffmeyer, that we can parse the numbers to support our arguments. I mean, when we look at the percentage of the general budget that is actually discretionary, because we have many things that we fund at fairly significant amounts, whether it's health and human services, whether it's education, whether it's public safety, all of those other types of things. When we look at that in context, I think it sort of shifts the whole way that we should be thinking about, you know, the Secretary of State's office funding this part of the general budget is one part of the general budget that we appropriate, but there's an incredible amount of money that's already spoken for, whether it's transportation or other types of things. So I think as we think about these dollar amounts, I think we need to take a look and not just do a very specific view in one way and a very, very broad view in another way. I mean, maybe it's my architectural training. For me, consistency is really, really important. And as long as I understand how we're going to be approaching this, I think it will be able to help our conversations on how we're able to move forward. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Halpern.
If I may, Mr. Chair and members, I would like to urge you to talk a little less about money and a little more about what it is the state needs to do, the security technologies it needs to put in place, the training it needs to put in place, and so forth. In 2016, before we had the highly publicized events, it was already the case that we were behind. But if you were to ask my colleague from the private sector, is it normal best practice to not have your network be segmented, not be using multi-factor authentication, not do basic cyber hygiene training for end users, not have database activity monitoring, not have a coherent security information management, all these things? I'm sure he would tell you, no, you are woefully behind the state of the art. You were woefully behind the state of the art in 2016, and you are now 3 years more behind the state of the art. So what I would like you to talk about is, do you want to stay there, or do you want to have database activity monitoring in place? Do you want to have security information event management in place? Do you want to have continuous data protection in place and so forth? Talk about those things and either agree with us that those are long overdue important needs for the state of Minnesota to secure its elections, or disagree, rather than talk about dollars in the abstract.
Representative or Senator Howe.
Mr. Chair, you know, I think we've already determined that this is about the money, because you've already offered that if we gave more money and asked Secretary Simon if that was enough. So, you know, I respect the testifier's comments, but what we're here to talk about is the money. That's what it's all about. And we have the money on the table at 1.534, and we could do that tonight. We can have the further discussions as we go forward.
Thank you, Senator Howell. And as I've stated, at this point, I can't come back to the Senate or go back to the House at the 1.5. And I guess my question for Senator Kiffmeyer, Chair Kiffmeyer, do you plan on having another meeting, calling a meeting tomorrow or not?
Well, Mr. Chair, we will give notice of a meeting, but I'm still working on getting this done tonight.
And Chair Kiffmeyer, as I'm seeing this, I'm like I said, I at this 1.5, we if the Senate is not going to come off that dollar amount, I can't see this being done tonight. And in deference of the people here, it's 10:15. Some of us have committee meetings tomorrow morning that we have to be back here for. The latest we can go is midnight. I don't see us getting 2/3 vote on both sides to go past an hour past. So 1 o'clock is not what I'm seeing. And we can sit here and argue back and forth that 1.5 is enough and 1.5 is not enough. I don't see us making progress here. So I'm asking you, Chair Kiffmeyer, do you plan calendaring a meeting tomorrow or are we going to go later, come back Monday? Again, I don't, on deference to everybody in the weather, I'm inclined to call one tomorrow or for Saturday, but I'm not going to do that because of the weather. And I know where the people's districts are. I don't think I want anybody driving that way in the weather if we're going to get 12 inches of snow this weekend. Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Have to remember that in regards to this proposal that we have here, the House already has voted for this amount in the last session. This is not new language. It's not a change in anything at all. Your folks have already voted in favor of this approach to get this done, and I would hate to put us off any further when we can do this right now and get this money in the hands instead of coming back and meeting. The Secretary of State can have this money in hands on Monday and be getting to work.
Secretary Simon, what is the difference between this and last year's money that was in the vetoed bill?
Right. Well, last year, the $1.534 million represented the amount that we thought we could get going on immediately in time for the 2018 election. So that's what that was all about. But that was before we convened the working group, which started pretty shortly after the session ended and went until late November. So again, that was a group that met. You were part of that group, and we met throughout the interim, including all the subcommittees, came back, had a lot of thoughtful vetting and screening and filtering and exchange of ideas. That report has been on legislators' desks since late November. And so it's puzzling as to why if people had a problem with it or reservations or wanted to hit the pause button, that might have been the time. It would have been the time to start those conversations, but there were no such conversations. So you can imagine from our standpoint and the standpoint of others in the counties and cities and townships, some of whom have testified here tonight, you can imagine what they're thinking about that. So all I can say is that was a different legislative session. It obviously doesn't bind this legislative session. It doesn't, you know, count as a House position or a Senate position for that matter, something that was done last session. But that's really for the legislators in the room to decide.
And Senator Kiffmeyer.
So just to clarify that the origination of the whole approach was to say that when Senator Gazelka and the Speaker discussed, there were several things that were on the table in the last session. This would have been done except for the governor executing a veto. And because of that veto, we're in this position this year. And all across, we have had the approach of taking those things that were well agreed to in a very strong bipartisan way to bring those forward and get those out the door and get them done, and other things that we would continue to work on and complete by the end of our session. And that is the commitment from our majority leader and following through with that. This should not be a difficult thing to agree to this proposal. The 1.534 between cybersecurity and the SVR system, this should not be a difficult vote whatsoever.
Well, Senator Kiffmeyer, as I stated a couple times already, at the 1.534. Again, that was voted down this year, this session. When this bill was on the floor, there was an amendment to do that, and it was voted down overwhelmingly. And the bill that we passed at the 6.6 was passed bipartisan off our floor. So, like I said, we could sit here and talk back and forth all night. I don't see us making much progress right now. So I'm asking, are you going to be calling a meeting tomorrow, or are we looking to when are you going to be planning on scheduling the next meeting?
Mr. Chair, I think that it sounds like having gotten to this point this evening, it might be best to agree to adjourn for the evening, and we will give notice in regards to our intentions for tomorrow.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just point of clarification. I don't think it was an amendment for $1.5 million that was on the House floor. I think it was a motion to concur, if I remember right. But just for correct the record.
You're correct. I misspoke. There was an amendment in committee that was voted down. Then there was an amendment on the floor that got pulled when the vote was passed on because it would have been because it was adding the 163 and would have been out of order by our rules. That's right. I thank you for correcting me. I was wrong on that. But again,
I get my zeros mixed up sometimes.
Yeah, I do too. And Representative Vogel, yeah, and it was the motion to concur that it was overwhelmingly turned down. Representative Dean.
Mr. Chair and members of this conference committee, I think that we sort of have two options, as I see it. One option is we stand 100% on what we passed in each of our bodies, and ultimately we continue to meet, and nothing ends up happening. And I think that that's a really, really bad option. I would hope that we would be able to enter into some type of negotiation to find an area around the middle, because I'm not going to say the middle, because I think that's sometimes really, really difficult to define, because although Senator Howe, you said this is about the money, I think there are other things that it's about than just it is about the money, but there are other broader things that it's about as well. And I think as we begin to think and begin to deliberate about the money, I think we should be beginning to delineate what these other things might be. I'm not a union negotiator. I've never been good at walking into negotiation and say, here's where you are, here's where we are, let's meet in the middle and everything's fine. I believe that when you enter a negotiation, that there are some things that each party wants. And if we can uncover what those things that each party wants, it often creates an opportunity where both sides can get actually more than what they initially came into the negotiation with. So I would hope that we would choose the latter rather than the former option, because the former of each of us just standing strong on what we've put forward ultimately gets none of the funds that, by the way, the state has already received, into the hands of Secretary of State to assure that our elections are secure moving forward. So I would just like to add that for conversation. It appears we're going to be adjourning here soon, but I just wanted to get that in people's heads to think about and sort of, marinate or whatever we want to call it, sit in and process, because I think there are some things that we can get to. And I would hope that we would begin to go down that path of trying to uncover what those things are. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes. Senator Giffmeyer?
Well, I appreciate all your good comments, but I think we maybe have done our work for that we can do for tonight, and we will be in touch with you tomorrow, let you know.
I look forward to that. It would have been, if it wasn't for the weather, it'd be my inclination if we don't meet tomorrow to meet on Saturday. But
out of respect for everybody. I don't want to do that. If we're looking at Monday would be the next meeting, that's next. But if we don't meet Monday, we will be meeting Tuesday. That's my intention. We need to get this work done, and I would hope that counter proposal, other than just this or nothing, I hope would come from the Senate. I think we made a good faith effort from the House with our offer to start meeting halfway, accepting language that didn't pass in the House, and moving forward. I think that was a good faith effort on our part to get this thing settled. But I hope to hear back from the Senate with an offer that we can bring back to the floor of the House. As I said, the 1.534 is not, I can't bring that back to the House. So I hope that something comes forward that we can talk about and come forward with. And to Mr. Halperin, yes, money shouldn't be the only thing we're talking about. We should be talking about the security of our system, the upgrading of our system, protecting the security of our voter file and our information that our citizens of our state have. That is what this is about. Unfortunately, when it comes down to what we're going to pay for and do, it ultimately comes down to money, and that's what we're talking about here, is where we can come in between to come up with a solution that we can start getting this money released.
Well, Mr. Chair, I appreciate all of that.
Kiffmeyer.
Thank you very much. I appreciate all of that. And again, our commitment is to see to it of the security of Minnesota's elections, which are already eighth most secure in the country. We have had on the record testimony in regards to a variety of other issues. We are in a good place, but we do recognize that it's too bad, though, that tonight we could have had immediate action. This could have gone and gotten that excellent start that is very important, was testified as the most critical part of it, and that there's another not a very long time to the end of session. In the meantime, all of those other commitments as far as going through all of those things will certainly occur, and we will follow through and keep that commitment. But it's too bad that we're just saying no tonight to having a very important critical part, over $1.5 million. But, Mr. Chair, with that, maybe a motion to adjourn is in order.
I don't believe we need to have a motion to adjourn. Anybody else have any questions or comments? We've taken testimony already for tonight, Rick. We're done with that. If there are no other questions or comments, I guess we're adjourned for tonight. And I look forward to hearing when our meeting is either tomorrow or Monday.